72, this is your station of the sea, RNI on shortwave, 48.34 meter, 6205 kilohertz, en de 49 meter band, waar u nu kunt luisteren naar het unieke verhaal der buitenkuststations, presenteerd van Radio Noordzee Internationaal, of kortswelle 49 meter Europaland, die eenmalige geschichte des kustenentfernten rundfunks, as we are about to hear the saga of the stations of the sea, courtesy of Radio Noordzee International Shortwave Service, and North Sea Goes DX. In the mid-50s, the Americas abounded with private commercial stations, each of which appealed to a certain audience, offering a variety of programs, benefiting quality-wise from the close competition. The airwaves in most of the old world were taken up by non-commercial state-run stations, which, through their strict broadcasting monopoly, made competition impossible until in 1958 a suitable alternative was found, giving birth to the stations of the sea. The history of these stations of the sea being a continuous struggle against the powers of water and wind, against the powers of governments and their special legislation for the occasion, has been, to say the least, a most eventful one. And the first event in a row of many takes us to Scandinavia. In 1958, a ship called Lucky Star, flying the Panamanian flag, dropped anchor in the Øresund, somewhere between Copenhagen and Malmö. From it, Danish Radio Merkur started broadcasting on FM. The station became very popular in Denmark, but also in parts of Norway and Sweden. As a matter of fact, in 1961, Radio Merkur had over 2.5 million listeners and some 900 advertisers. Since Radio Merkur had so many Swedish listeners, Mrs. Britt Wadner started in 1959 to buy 3 hours airtime on the station for the broadcasting of Swedish commercial programs. Soon the Lucky Star became too small, and the ship was sold to an organization called Denmark's Kommersiella Radio. This station was less successful, as it was forced to close down some 5 months after starting the project because a murder had been committed on board. Radio Merkur, on the other hand, continued its broadcasts 18 hours per day from a larger ship called Cheetah 2. In January 1962, in view of the upcoming Danish legislation against the offshore broadcasters, Swedish Mrs. Britt Wadner started her own radio suit from the ship Cheetah 1, anchored off the south coast of Sweden. Like Radio Merkur, the broadcasts of Radio Sud were on VHF only. In the Baltic Sea, we meet another ship, the 430-ton Bonjour, serving the north of Sweden from positions off Stockholm. After numerous setbacks, the first test by Radio Nord from international waters took place on the 21st of February 1961. The official opening was on March the 8th at 10:00 hours, when the Radio Nord waltz was played for the very first time. Radio Nord, announcing 495 meters as its wavelength, was in fact broadcasting on exactly 498.2 meters. On board, two 10-kilowatt transmitters, of which one was used as a standby, enabled the program to be heard in the greater part of Sweden. The antenna mast on the Bonjour was 37 meters high. Its programs were in Swedish and Finnish. It was Radio Nord which introduced the use of jingles in offshore radio. Var välkomna
varje dag till tornen för miljoner.
Radio Nord used a top 20 format and became very popular with the Swedish and Finnish public in a matter of weeks. The DJs working for Radio Nord had to manage at least 3 hours daily and usually more than that. Most of the programs were pre-recorded in Stockholm and were then dropped near the ship in a cylinder. Some of the programs, like for instance Siesta, went out live and were produced by the newsreaders on the ship. On the morning of December 6th, a furious sea made the Bonjour heel over 45 degrees. Suddenly, the anchor chain broke and the ship started to drift towards territorial waters. The broadcasts were eventually interrupted, and the fight against the storm went on until the following morning at 4:30, when pilots came on board and guided the ship to the harbor of Sandhamn. After necessary repairs had been carried out, 40 hours later, the ship was back on the air. On March 29, 1962, discussion started in the Swedish Parliament and the so-called Lex Radio Nord was passed and became effective on the 1st of August 1962. Radio Nord closed down in the beginning of July, however, in view of a possible sale of the entire project to the Atlanta organization in the United Kingdom. In the south of Sweden, however, Radio Sud continued in spite of the Swedish equivalent to the Marine Broadcasting Offences Act.
Till Radio Syd, Sveriges kommersiella radio. Vi gör nu ett uppehåll i våra sändningar. Tackar er som lyssnat. Önskar er en riktig god natt. Och hälsar er alla hjärtligt välkomna tillbaka klockan 6.
On January 31st, 1962, at midnight, Radio Mercur closed down as a result of the anti-pirate law, which came into effect at that time in Denmark.
It has given the Danish people many thousands of hours of listening pleasure during these 4 years. And if nothing else, it has given them a choice. Now, all this must stop. That is, according to a new law, Radio Mercur will not be allowed to employ Danish citizens in any capacity, nor will Danish firms be permitted to participate in the role of sponsor. That means that should Mercur continue, it will be in the hands of foreign interests. I would like to take this opportunity to say it has been a distinct pleasure these past few months to be associated with Radio Mercur. I would like to thank the management of the station for their confidence in me. Not to forget, of course, our devoted sponsors, without whose help this program, Copenhagen Today, would not have been possible. I would like also to express my gratitude to the engineer who was assigned to this show, Bjarne Jorgensen, and who has proved to be a tremendous help to me in the planning and execution of these programs. A great big thanks to everyone else here at Radio Mercur who has contributed in some small way to make this program a success. And the biggest thank you of all goes to you, our listeners, without whose support we could not have existed as long as we have. And now, friends, This is your producer and host for Copenhagen Today, Hal Lawrence, saying, I've enjoyed being your man about town this summer, hoping we'll see each other very soon, and bidding one and all goodbye till we meet again.
However, encouraged by the fact that Radio Sud continued broadcasting, Radio Mercure returned to the airwaves on August 13, 1962. But the then Danish Labour government acted promptly. In the middle of the night on August 16th, the ship, anchored in international waters, was boarded by Danish policemen, the crew was arrested, and the ship confiscated. In Sweden, Mrs. Wadner was repeatedly jailed by the authorities for running an illegal radio station. The Swedish law also stipulates, however, that a prisoner is to be enabled to carry out his or her profession in jail, and so Mrs. Wadner's prison cell was turned into a genuine studio. As a result, Radio Sud announced its programs as a direct relay from our studio in the Hinsberg prison, thus attracted even more listeners and advertisers. One stormy night, the Cheetah 1 was severely damaged, and in an attempt to bring the station into safety, the ship set sail to Malmö. Unfortunately, the Cheetah 1 sank inside the harbor. A setback, but not defeat. Shortly afterwards, Radio Sud came back on the air from the standby ship Cheetah 2, which Mrs. Wadner held off the Mercure organization. The Swedish authorities then secretly decided to jam the broadcasts of Radio Sud. But Mrs. Wadner had been informed, and the morning on which the jamming was due to start, Radio Sud was on the air on a different frequency. In the middle of December 1965, Radio Sud was forced to close down because of the large amounts of pack ice which endangered the ship. On April 21st, 1960, Radio Veronica started its transmissions off Scheveningen on 192 meters on board a ship called Borkum Riff. The Dutch programs of Veronica became tremendously popular in the Netherlands and the Flemish-speaking part of Belgium.
En dat was dan dus een dubbel verzoekje, de T-set met Ma Belle Ami.
Hey, wat heeft Romeo, 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 Romeo... Shakespeare had het door. Romeo heeft een hit, 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 hit.
Krachtvoer op 192. 1 in de Veronica Tipperate. Dit is Max Romeo. Hij heeft niets te maken met Shakespeare, hoor. Want die Romeo heet een Montague. Maar oké, dit is The Dream. 1 in Veronica's Tipperate.
The Dutch government would have liked taking immediate action against Veronica, but they realized that it would have meant political suicide. In 1964, the ship Borkum Riff was replaced by a more spacious vessel, a former trawler, the Norderney. On Saturday, October 12, 1962, at 14:25 hours, Belgium got its first offshore station. Radio Antwerpen from the ship Eulenspiegel anchored off Zeebrugge and broadcasting with a power of 5 kilowatt on 201.07 meters, 1492 kilohertz.
Dit is Radio Antwerpen van op het schip Eulenspiegel op de Noordzee, de zender waar u naar luistert.
Thank you.
Luisteraars, u krijgt nu Dans tot Middernacht. Een bond programma van dansmuziek allerhande. Zang, ritme en sentiment maken ook van deze avond weer een echte gezellige avond. En dat wenst u Rijnhuis
The Eulenspiegel was on the air daily from 7 in the morning to midnight with Flemish programs except for a French program, Y'a de la musique, which was on the air from 1630 to 1700 hours. The 73-year-old station owner, Georges de Calouvet, was regularly on the ship and used to talk to the listeners a few minutes daily after the popular lunchtime request show, Groeten van Eulenspiegel.
De groeten van Eulenspiegel, Radio Antwerpen, programma van de Vraagde Plaatsen.
Today, Mr. de Calouvet announced that the shortwave transmitter in the 41-meter band had been put in operation. A few days later, reception reports came in from places as far away as Canada. Actually, Radio Eulenspiegel was the first offshore station to broadcast on shortwave. Early in December 1962, the Belgian Parliament passed the anti-pirate law. On December 13th, Mr. de Calouvet died in hospital after an operation. A few days later, gale force winds tore the Eulenspiegel from its anchor chains and destroyed the broadcasting equipment. The wreck stranded on the beach of Cadzand in the Netherlands. In October 1963, Irish Ronan O'Reilly set preparations for the first British offshore station. A 763-ton former passenger ferry, Frederica, was fitted out with a 168-foot-high aerial mast, two 10-kilowatt transmitters, and necessary studio equipment in Greenore Harbour, some 60 miles north of Dublin. At the same time, Alan Crawford bought the now 470-ton former Radio Nord ship, which had been renamed Mi Amigo. The ship's 141-foot-high mast was also installed at Greenore. At 6 p.m. on Good Friday, March 27, 1964, the MV Caroline anchored 5 miles off the Harwich coast, and 3 hours later, Radio Caroline was testing. The official opening of Britain's first commercial radio station was on Easter Sunday. Broadcasting hours were from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. The wavelength, 199 meters.
You're tuned to Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station.
On May the 9th, 1964, Radio Atlanta started test transmissions from the Mi Amigo anchored 3.5 miles from Frinton-on-Sea. On May the 12th, regular transmission started on 200.6 meters.
Yeah, now I want to be your loving baby. I want to be your man. You're moving along there, everybody, with the rocket label. Here on the good ship Radio Atlanta, where now the contact time is 7:30.
On July the 2nd, an agreement was reached between Radios Caroline and Atlanta. Radio Atlanta changed name into Radio Caroline South, whereas the original Caroline ship sailed to Ramsey Bay off the Isle of Man to become Radio Caroline North. In spite of repeated government threats, business was brisk for the so-called pirates, and as a result, other people tried their hand at offshore broadcasting. On May 26, 1964, pop singer Screaming Lord Sutch took over Shivering Sands Fort, an abandoned anti-aircraft tower in the Thames estuary, some 9 miles of Whitstable in Kent, and started Hills Radio Such, Britain's first teenage radio station on an announced 197 meters in the medium wave.
Good morning to you all, and a very, very, very good morning to you. I'm Nick Carey here at Radio Such. We're soon to Radio Such on 197 meters in the wave, and a very good morning to you.
Radio Such was intended at first as a non-commercial alternative station for the promotion of records by little-known groups. Scheduled broadcasting hours were from 12 noon to 2 p.m., from 5 to 8 p.m., and from 12:15 to 2:15 a.m. Due to its very low power, usually less than 1 kilowatt, radio search could only be picked up in some parts of Kent and Essex and coastal areas in Holland and Belgium. But the station's lack of personality and its continuing malorganization proved to be even a greater handicap than the low power of its battery-run transmitter. And so, in October 1964, Screaming Lord Sutch sold the station to his manager, Mr. Reginald Calvert, for £5,000. The station's name was changed into Radio City.
The very, very popular Diane Perez and Nicky Scott there with this week's number 27 sound on City, and that is called Shafum Shafum. Radio at the time, 12 and a half people, 4 o'clock. Mike Fahey and Mac Ray. With the hits of the day.
The light of day.
In Monsters Mac's Music Show.
Sing away, away.
A few months before the Radio City deal had been closed, another of the anti-aircraft towers, the Red Sands, had been taken over for broadcasting purposes. On June the 3rd, 1964, Radio Invictus started beaming its good music programs to the listeners of Kent on 306 meters with the help of a 1 kilowatt transmitter. Radio Invictor was initially on the air from midnight to 6 p.m. and was quite popular with housewives. On December 16, 1964, the station manager, Mr. Tom Pepper, returning from the fort, drowned, together with DJ Simon Ashley and engineer Martin Shaw. As a result of this tragedy, Radio Invictor closed down on December 18th, 1964. On December 23rd, 1964, regular programs started from a former U.S. minesweeper Galaxy, home of wonderful Radio London, Big L on 266 in the medium wave band. An initial 17 kilowatts output, later raised to 50 kilowatt, enabled Big L's Fab 40 climbers and Revive 45s to reach millions of youngsters in the United Kingdom and Western Europe. For the first time, Caroline's offshore monopoly was endangered.
Have you ever been?
Have you ever been?
In January 1965, a new station calling itself Radio KING started testing from the Red Sands fort on 236 meters.
Heralding a new big sound of music and news over London, this is the KING test transmission. Is number one British radio, and this is KING's Sousa Time.
King Radio continued Invictor's good music format, but unfortunately with very little success. Eventually, on September 25th, 1965, the station was sold to an organization called Estuary Radio Limited, managed by Mr. Ted Albury, and the station's name was changed into Radio 390. using a 35-kilowatt transmitter and an antenna of which the top was 285 feet above sea level, Radio 390 soon became the most popular good music station in the United Kingdom and the Benelux countries.
Your Continental Cabaret was introduced by Mark Hammerson. Our next program follows in just a few moments.
BCM 390, London WC1.
Tonight's edition of The Voice of Business covers a range of subjects of interest to farmers and agricultural engineers. If you're a farmer or have friends who are farmers, remember Friday's Voice of Business becomes The Voice of Agribusiness. Tonight at 7:30.
390 time is now just after 6 o'clock. Presenting Eve, the woman's magazine of the air, takes you stateside.
In the meantime, on the continent, the Dutch government on December 17, 1964, at 0907 hours, had closed down Radio and TV Noordzee, which had been broadcasting radio and television programs to Holland on 214 meters and Channel 11 respectively, since August 15, 1964, from an artificial island built off the coast of Noordwijk aan Zee.
Op het ogenblik in het hartje van Amsterdam, namelijk op de Dam. Want we zijn heel erg benieuwd hoe onze eerste proefuitzendingen ontvangen zijn.
Meneer, mag ik iets vragen? Heeft u TV Noordzee goed ontvangen?
Nou, ik heb hem gisteravond schitterend ontvangen. Ik kan het niet meer zeggen als mooi. Als het altijd zo is, er zijn natuurlijk allemaal foutjes, maar het is in het begin is het altijd moeilijk. Ik heb het juist goed ontvangen en ik ben blij dat die nieuwe programma's zo goed naar voren komen.
Nee, ik heb wel geprobeerd, maar ik heb niet ontvangen.
Nou, we hebben het niet zo erg goed ontvangen, maar mijn vader heeft allemaal gekke dingen met de strijkboot uitgehaald.
Nou, ik heb het wel ontvangen, een beetje wazig, maar ik ben zelf wel wat bezig geweest aan de tinnen. En het ging vrijwel goed, maar om 6:30... zaten alle mannen op het dak om de tinnen bij te draaien.
Ja hoor, we konden het goed zien.
Ik heb het zeer goed ontvangen, ik heb het gisteravond gezien.
Dit is Radio Noordzee op 214 meter.
Goedemorgen, dit is Sonja van Proosdij. Eerst geef ik u een overzicht van ons programma. Van 9 tot 9:30 ons programma Gospels and Spirituals. Daarna kunt u tot 10:00 luisteren naar de ochtendpromenade. Van 10:00 tot 10:30 volgt dan het programma Andante Cantabile. Daarna brengen we een 30:30 door in Weense sfeer met onze Wiener Melange. Van 11:00 tot 12:00 kunt u luisteren naar klassieke muziek. Tot 12:30 volgt dan de pianococktail. Van 12:30 tot 13:00 gaan we in vliegende vaart op reis. En tenslotte kunt u luisteren naar ons programma tussen 13:00 en 14:00.
In the 4 months of its existence, the REM, which stood for Reclame Exploitatie Maatschappij, had become so popular that the TROS organization, backed by Radio and TV Noordzee, obtained a license after the close down of the latter station to the effect that they were allowed to broadcast a number of hours per month via the official Dutch broadcasting system. In England, Radio City chose a new wavelength, 299 meters, and started broadcasting with a power of 4.5 kilowatt. In September 1965, a minor war was waged between Radio City and the men of Mr. Roy Bates over the possession of the Knock John Tower. Finally, some sort of an agreement was reached between the two parties, and Mr. Bates started his Radio Essex from the fort on 222 meters. Radio Essex was a local commercial station, the first offshore station to introduce round-the-clock broadcasting.
The Dane Hills Roundabout in grade. That's Essex, of course.
And Dane Hills have a fine selection of Fort Cortinas for you to choose from. That's Dane Hills and the Dane Hills Roundabout in grade. And that's in Essex, of course.
Minutes to midnight on December 31st, 1965, Radio Scotland took the air on 242 meters.
On 242 meters of the medium wave band, this is Radio Scotland.
Radio Scotland blasts off at 6 a.m. Monday to Saturday with Rooster Call. Now, if this doesn't stop you yawning, nothing will. We also keep an eye on the clock for you with our frequent time check. Before the party starts, we'd like to introduce you to our managing director, Mr. Tommy Shields.
Good evening. This is a proud moment for me, and indeed for all of us here, for after many months of trial and tribulation, Radio Scotland is now a floating reality. Thanks to the skill and...
The Radio Scotland ship Comet was initially anchored in the Firth of Forth, and the station broadcast with a power of 20 kilowatts. January 1966 was a very stormy one. After Radio London had been in trouble during the week previously, in the evening of January 19th, the Mi Amigo started drifting. The crew on board were unaware, and it was not noticed until the ship was about to ground on Frinton Beach. The Mi Amigo was damaged and had to sail to Holland to be repaired. At this point in time, Mrs. Britt Wadner offered Ronan O'Reilly the use of her cheetah too until the Mi Amigo was repaired. As a result, Radio Caroline South came back on the air on Sunday, February 13th, from the former Radio Suit ship. On April the 1st, 1966, the Mi Amigo returned to the offshore scene, broadcasting on 259 meters with a power of 50 kilowatts.
You're wondering what it is on 259. It's a test turn for 24 Radio Caroline. We sound Caroline.
Radio London, in turn, increased its output to 75 kilowatts. In May 1966, to improve reception conditions of Radio Scotland, especially in the populated Glasgow area, the Comet was towed around the north coast of Scotland and was anchored in the Firth of Clyde.
Much anymore, says Alec of the All-Stars. Another record available on Scotia, and as I say that, into the studio walks...
Guess who?
The man that did the Swing Across Midday program.
You mean the Swing Across the Midden show?
Oh, it's Yakko.
Yes, Yakko, your lovable ludicrous one.
How are you, Yak? Hi, hello, Tony, and welcome to the show.
I see.
Yak used to do impersonations. I tell you, Yak, why don't you do a couple of impersonations of some of our boys that have gone abroad? How about Ben Healy?
Incidentally... Now, isn't that a good idea?
What about Spencer?
Bob, this your plain man's friendly on the Rooster Call show.
Marvelous. And who else did we have? Richard Park.
Richard, I'm radio here from Kirkcaldy. It's very unkind. The most unusual idea.
Tremendous. So, well, why don't you introduce this next record?
Well, this is really Yakko. You'll never believe it because one's a mammy-o, daddy-o.
Let's go with Michael Gill. And here we go, Lunas and Ravers. When you and I were young, Maggie.
in the southern hemisphere during that same month of May 1966, Mr. David Gape's application for a broadcasting license met with refusal by the New Zealand authorities. This would eventually lead to the preparation of Radio Hauraki. In Europe, on May the 3rd, we witnessed the birth of the American-backed twin stations, Swinging Radio England and Britain Radio, broadcasting from the 480-ton Olga Patricia, anchored in the neighborhood of Caroline Sound.
Radio England. Hi there, this is Rick Rambo with a brand new sound for the British Isles.
Stay with the fun.
Woo-hoo!
Hear all the kids on playing in Radio England.
A few things here we'd like to give you. Just a preview of the last round, which will be coming your way on Swinging Radio England, where the action is.
Swinging Radio England, where the action is.
For the British Isles, Swinging Radio England. Time now is 3:30 on May the 3rd, 1966. First day on the air for Swinging Radio England. Here's Gene Pitney to say, "Ah, this is so nice from out of the Hall of Fame."
Swinging Radio England, with its all-American style top 40 format, went out on 227 meters with a power of 55 kilowatts, whereas the easy listening sound of Britain Radio was broadcast on 3.5 meters with the same power. After a few days, the name of the ship was changed into a very meaningful laissez-faire. However, it soon proved that this giant project would not be a very successful one. On June the 9th, Radio 270, local station from Yorkshire, started test transmissions off Scarborough from the 160-ton Ocean 7.
That puts the wrap on the Radio 270 Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday morning. For the last 2 swinging hours, you've been in the company of the DJ BJ Bull Grammar. Hope you've enjoyed yourself. Don't stop now, it's just about me, huh? Don't forget, if you're making to or from a special destination this morning, take it nice and easy on the highways and the byways, because we want to talk to you, not about you.
Radio 270 made use of a 10-kilowatt transmitter and became well established in the Midlands, where it meant heavy competition for both the Carolines and London. In the night of June the 19th, 1966, Radio City on the Shivering Sands was taken over by a boarding party led by a certain Miss Kitty Black. From then onwards, events succeeded each other rapidly. The next morning, Radio City remained silent. Mr. Calvert was refused police aid since the Shivering Sands were judged beyond British jurisdiction. 2 days later, Mr. Calvert, investigating the boarding and the reasons behind it, was shot by Mr. Oliver Smedley, chairman of Project Atlanta, organization which had lent Mr. Calvert important amounts of money. On June 26th, the boarding party left the Shivering Sands and Radio City, the Tower of Power, recommenced transmissions, now under the management of Mrs. Dorothy Calvert. Lack of advertising revenue forced Swinging Radio England to discontinue transmissions on November 13th, 1966. The next day, at 1600 hours, the first programs for Dutch Radio Dolphin were broadcast from the laissez-faire. Radio Dolphin and its easy-listening format was even less successful than its swinging predecessor. December the 5th, 1966, and off New Zealand, the first regular test transmission of Radio Hauraki on board the CD-1, anchored in the Hauraki Gulf, was broadcast on 1480 kilohertz with a power of 1 kilowatt.
Listen to Radio Hauraki, top of the dial, and we're broadcasting a test transmission on 1480.
No doubt you know that we've been in the Great Barrier at Port Tribena. We've done some modifications to the transmitter, and we've also erected out full antenna, so we're expecting to be putting out quite a good signal tonight. We'd like to know how well you are receiving us, so drop us a line, Radio Hauraki, post office box 2964 in Auckland, 2964, and let us know just how you're picking up Radio Hauraki. 12 minutes past 8 now, top of the dial.
Started off the big government offensive against the offshore broadcasters. In accordance with a very debatable order in council, dating from September the 30th, 1964, the fort-based stations were considered to be operating from within the three-mile limit and were prosecuted one by one. In January 1967, Radio Essex, which had been renamed BBMS, was thus forced to close down. On February the 8th, Radio City went out of existence. Of the four base stations, only Radio 390 managed, however not without interruption in broadcasting, to hold out until July 28, 1967, a few weeks before the Marine Broadcasting Offences Act dealt with the other British offshore stations. On July 23, 1967, Radio 33 Zulu, which had succeeded Radio Dolphin in March, closed down, followed by Radio 355, former Britain Radio, on August 6, 1967. At 3 o'clock on Monday, August 14, 1967, Radio London closed down as Big Lil was played for the very last time on 266.
Big L time is 3 o'clock and Radio London is now closing down.
At midnight of the same day, also Radio Scotland, which had been moved back to positions in the Firth of Forth, and Radio 270 closed down. Only the Carolines continue.
This is Radio Caroline. It is now 12 at night. Caroline, continue.
also in New Zealand, Radio Hauraki was making offshore history.
Only 4 days after the disaster which destroyed the Tiri 1, Radio Hauraki recommenced broadcasting on board a bigger ship, the Kapuni, which had been renamed Tiri 2. In the meantime, in Europe, helping insufficient advertising revenue, Radio Caroline International had run into financial difficulties as large debts began to accumulate with the offshore tender and supply company of Weissmuller in Holland. On the morning of Sunday, March the 3rd, 1968, two Weissmuller tugs started to tow the Caroline ships to Amsterdam. At this point in time, Radio Veronica and Radio Hauraki were the only offshore broadcasters left. As a surprise to many, on the 23rd of January 1970 was the commencing of test transmissions of Radio Nordzee International on board a 570-ton Mebo 2 anchored off Scheveningen. Initially, the programs were in English and German. The official opening of Radio Nordzee International was on the 28th of February 1970, with broadcasts on 186 meters in a medium wave and also in shortwave 49 meters and FM. At the end of March 1970, RNI took up positions on the Essex coast, but the British Labour government had the broadcast jammed. During the election campaign, Radio Nordzee broadcast from Holland as Radio Caroline International. With the Conservatives in power after the elections, the jamming continued, and Mebo 2 returned to the Dutch coast on the 23rd of July. In the meantime, another offshore station had started testing off the Dutch coast. Capital Radio on 270 meters, 1115 kilohertz, had commenced test transmissions on June the 14th. Capital Radio broadcasting from the 45-meter-long motor ship King David was intended as a good music station.
Bij het begin van de laatste toon is het 10 uur precies.
Here is Radio Capital.
This is Capital Radio.
EC Radio Capital.
Aquí Radio Capital.
Here is Radio Capital.
Here is Radio Capital op golflengte 270 meter, 1115 kilohertz.
Radio Capital maakt gebruik van een zender van 10 kilowatt aan boord van de MS King David in de internationale wateren, 5 zeemijlen uit de kust van Nederland. Hier is Radio Capital.
The official start of Capital Radio was on September the 1st. The station made use of a 10 kilowatt transmitter, but the actual output was never more than 1 kilowatt, which accounts for the usually poor reception quality when not in the immediate vicinity of Noordwijk aan Zee, in front of which the King David was anchored. Also, the revolutionary circular antenna proved not to be as effective as had been expected. On August 28th, two ships attacked the Mebo 2 and tried to tow the station into Scheveningen. The continuous calls for assistance were effective, however, and the boarding party led by former nightclub owner Kees Manders fled. In September, an agreement was reached between Radio Veronica and RNI. Following this, Radio Nordzee International closed down at 1100 hours on the 24th of September, 1970.
It's now 11 o'clock.
Capital Radio's King David did not hold out against the autumn storms
and one hectic November night, the ship was thrown on the beach. A couple of days later, a Weissmuller tug towed the ship away, but the International Broadcaster Society was unable to pay for the towing fee, and the King David was sold. In January 1971, RNI recommenced test broadcasting, and the station was officially reopened at 1400 hours on February 21st, 1971.
This is Radio Nancy International. In the medium wave on 220 meters, 1,367 kilocycles.
In March, the Dutch program started on RNI, very much to the annoyance of Radio Veronica. On the 15th of May, three frogmen placed a bomb in the engine room of the Mebo 2. The fire which followed the explosion completely destroyed the afterdeck. Thanks to the help of many vessels which had heard the Mayday calls from the Mebo, the fire was put out and further damage could be avoided. Since no broadcasting equipment had been damaged, transmissions continued as scheduled. Apart from the December storm, which tore the Mebo 2 from its anchors at the end of 1971, no further difficulties arose for RNI. With Radio Hauraki, now broadcasting on land in New Zealand, and Radio Sud transmitting from studios in Bathurst, the Gambia, Radio Veronica and Radio Nordsee International are presently the only offshore broadcasters left in the entire world. The airwaves next month, this is yours truly, A.J. Behrens, thanking Pierre de Saint and the Dreammaster Good Guys for their assistance and wishing each and every one of you happy holidays and good DXing. Cheerio!